Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, August 28th, 2008. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. For this week, Andy Sparks and I brew on the patio and put to test one of the hop stretching techniques that you heard Chris Colby talk about in last week's show, steeping hops in a French press coffee maker. We're trying to get the most out of my homegrown Cascade hops. Well, if you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And you can follow me on Twitter. My username is basicbrewing, all one word. Here in the United States, we have a holiday coming up. It's Labor Day weekend, which signals the end of summer, pretty much, and the beginning of the brewing season. And I can't wait. I'm going to try to brew a Belgian brunette with one of the zombie yeast strains that I'm nursing along. You may remember I mentioned them last week. And even though they expired in October of 2006, they've managed to build up their numbers in their starters. I started by adding a cup of 10-20 wort to each and then stepped that up to a quart of 10-30 wort. And both seem to be doing quite well. And I'm going to step them up again to 2 quarts before pitching. But I've got to decide which I'm going to use. Maybe I'll do a double batch and split it. I don't know. But you may also remember from last week that Robert from Miamisburg, Ohio, was looking for a recipe for apple ale. Well, Patrick from Boston wrote in saying that he had a recipe for apple ale on his blog. So if you look in the description of this week's episode on basicbrewingradio.com, I'll post a link. I appreciate your sending in the recipe, Patrick. You may also remember Eric from Chandler, Arizona, wrote in asking if it's better to add grain to water or water to grain when you're building your mash. And you'll hear Andy's thoughts and my thoughts later in the podcast as we're actually doing it on the patio. But in the meantime, Dale from Hillsboro, North Carolina, weighs in with this. Dale says, "For my limited understanding, I don't believe it really matters which way you go. Personally, though, I add grain to water, especially if I'm doing an infusion in the cooler tun. I know my strike temperature for my infusion both before I add it to the cooler and once it's in the cooler. That way, I'm quite confident I'm going to hit my target without having to make any adjustments. When I'm doing step mashing in my heatable tun, that's not so important, but I still add the grain to the water just as a matter of having a consistent process." So one more vote for grain to water. Thanks, Dale. But really, it's whatever works for you. Whatever you want to do. Nick from Burlington, Wisconsin writes, "I just harvested my hops and remembered you saying on a previous show that a listener suggested that you may want to try the Alton Brown Good Eats herb drying method for your hops and wanted to let you and everyone know that I did it that way and had dry hops in less than 24 hours. Nick says, "I really like this method. No heat used and did not have to wash them at all. I put them on the filters and checked them after work the next day. I would recommend this method." Well, thanks, Nick. Me personally, I'm still sticking with my low-tech method, at least for now. However, I know that there are those out there who don't have the space or the environment to dry hops like I do, and that's just laying them on a window screen propped up on, a couple of boxes. Maybe it's too humid where you are and you don't have air conditioning, or maybe you just don't have the space to have a bunch of hops sitting around. Whatever your drying method, Nick says that Alton Brown's herb drying method using a box fan and air filters works. So you can find it on YouTube. I found it by searching for Good Eats Herbal Preservation. So check that out to get some ideas for you. John from Mountain View, California writes, "Last weekend I was brewing up 5 gallons of stout when all of a sudden my landlord started banging at my front door. He hands me a notice from the Santa Clara County Department of Safety stating no open flames are permitted within 10 feet of a structure and no LPG tanks greater than 1.5 pounds can be stored on, in, or around a patio or deck. This ordinance only applies to apartments and condos." John says, "After contacting the county, I learned there were approximately 25 fire-related incidents in 2007 and there are approximately 1,735,000 people. John says, I will be petitioning this, and we'll keep you updated. Well, thanks, John. Good luck. That's a pretty good reminder to be sure that you know the law in your area and how it affects your brewing. It may not be your landlord. It may be a policeman with a ticket who shows up at the brewing party. And if you don't think the laws are reasonable or fair, do like John and see about them getting changed. And speaking of people working to change laws, Douglas Warzynski of Homebrewing Perspectives podcast peeped out of his den this week to post a quick recording to let us know that he's still around. Both Douglas and Mike the Hop Guy have new babies. Congratulations to both of them. So podcasting has been put on hold for a little while. We can understand that, but we're looking forward to hearing from them again and following their further brewing and parenting adventures. Tony from Painville, Kentucky wrote after hearing our coffee roasting show a couple weeks ago. Tony says, got to listen to the coffee roasting show today. Your guest got it all right. I began roasting coffee several years before I started brewing. Tony says, on my scale, I prefer the Fresh Roast 8 setup. It is economical and dependable, and I can make just enough coffee to keep me in fresh stuff. Also wanted to mention my supplier, CoffeeBeanCorral.com, in case you haven't seen them, mainly because they're a southern firm in Mississippi. They have good pricing, and I have had the best service with. Also, here in Kentucky. Also, they have a coffee matrix that is very useful for choosing green beans based on your criteria. Well, thanks, Tony. I appreciate that. I finally had time to go buy some green beans myself at a local coffee shop and try roasting beans. And I used my 1983 Wherever Popcorn Pumper popcorn popper, and it worked pretty well. But I have a couple of pieces of advice for you rookie coffee roasters out there. First of all, do it outside. my studio still kind of smells like the smoke that filled the place after my first attempt. And second, when you hear the second crack, you'll hear the first crack, you know, kind of like popcorn, and then you hear this little second crack. When you hear that second crack, pay close attention, because it doesn't take long for the beans to go from tasty and nicely roasted to being little pieces of charred cinder. Or at least that was my experience. However, I do learn from my mistakes sometimes, and my second and third batches turned out great. And I think I'm hooked on a new hobby. And we need to demonstrate how it's done with the popcorn popper on Basic Brewing Video. That'd be a fun podcast. And speaking of Basic Brewing Video, be sure to check out the latest episode featuring Robert Taylor's home-brewed sake and Steve Wilkes' Asian smoked duck pizzas. Very good, both those things. And look for an article on sake coming from Robert in an upcoming BYO magazine. Congratulations, Robert. So, now let's go out to the patio and brew, shall we? My buddy Andy Sparks from thehomebrewery.com was good enough to join me on the patio to try out the hop stretching method of using a French press coffee maker that you heard Chris Colby talk about last week on this very program. Well, Andy, welcome to the patio.
Oh, it's great to be here, James.
It's moist today. It's a humid August day in Northwest Arkansas.
Yeah, we're back to normal, I guess. You know, it's supposed to be hot and humid in Arkansas. It's been beautiful lately.
Well, we have a mission today. We're going to try the new hopping method using the French press coffee maker that we read about in Brew Your Own magazine. And I've got all these homegrown Cascade hops that I've been pulling off my hop vines. And so, you know, our mission is to make a hoppy Cascade Pale Ale. And we're going to do a little benchmarking.
That's right. You have a pale ale that you made earlier this year with the Cascade hops from last year. So we're going to take a taste of it and try and get an idea of kind of how much bitterness the hops from your hop yard produce. So here we go.
Pour away. Ooh, that's a pretty beer. Now, you are a fan of the monster hoppy
beers.
That's true. I am a hophead for sure.
With your Dale's Pale Ale shirt.
Yeah, that's right. Ooh, this smells wonderful, James.
Oh, thank you. Mm. That's a...
Well, the aroma character is right on. Give it a taste.
And it's actually faded a little bit since I bottled it. Some nice citrusy, which is a word I say in like every episode, but yeah. Citrusy, citrusy cascade smell.
Mm. Yeah, it's good. It has nice bitterness. It's not overpowering. I'm not sure. It'd be interesting if we had a beer with a known hop, you know, where we could actually say, okay, this was in the 8% range and they're about the same.
Yeah, my initial complaint with this beer when I first tasted it was that it wasn't bitter enough. That I was pretty pleased with the hoppy flavor and aroma, but the bitterness was just a little bit shy of what I was shooting for. However, the carbonation has brought that bitter character up a little bit.
It's more in balance now, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's a nice, easy drinking beer. How much alcohol does this have in it?
We have it's about 5.6% ABV. It started off at 10.54. I'll give you the recipe for this beer. It was 10 pounds of Turo, 1 pound of 60 Level Bond Crystal, which is pretty much my standard malt bill for
medium crystal malt. That's nice. Yeah. The light, you know, doesn't add a whole lot of color, so some people really don't think there's much point in adding it. The crystal adds a nice rich character.
And I did 1 ounce of homegrown whole, obviously, Cascade hops at 60 minutes, 0.8 ounces at 15 minutes, and I did that because that's how much I had in that bag.
Oh, okay.
And 0.65 ounces, I had another short bag at 5 minutes. So 1 ounce, 0.8 ounces, and then 0.65 ounces into the beer. And the starting gravity was 10.54.
Now, the hops that you used in this, these were ones that you harvested last year and processed and vacuum-packed and froze, right?
Correct.
Okay. So, and then the hops that we're talking about using this year, they're just finishing up the drying process right now, right?
Right. They're, in fact, do you want to go in and look
certainly
at them?
Let's check them out.
Let's walk into bring the brewer's logbook, and we'll walk through the house. What I've actually got in there, oh, and you're going to have to open the door. What I've actually got going in there is the hop drying room, where I pulled 2 pounds, 7 ounces of wet hops or fresh hops from the binds. And now what we've got is we have hops drying on window screens that are set on cardboard boxes. And as you can hear, they are crispy dry.
Yeah, they're ready to go now. How many days have you had these in here?
Almost a week that they've been on here, I believe.
They look beautiful.
Do a test here.
Mmm, beautiful. Well, I don't want to get all this hop dust and stuff all over your carpet here.
we have nice vacuum cleaners.
Yeah. I pinched it between my fingers. It's nice and sticky in the middle, but real dry at the edges and green, still green. Mmm, beautiful. Nice cascade aroma.
So those are the hops. So what are you thinking, Andy? I mean,
Put all these in the beer.
There's probably like 10 ounces of dried hops here. I don't know. So what do you think? I mean, let's start off with a malt bill. I mean, what should we do? I mean, I don't think I even have a pound of 60 Level Bond, but I've got some 90 Level Bond crystal. I got plenty of Turo.
Okay. Well, I would just substitute the 90 for the 60. It's not that much different in color. You could reduce it a hair, but maybe, because this beer is just about right on color-wise. So, but other than that, I would stick with this much malt, you know, not go much more than this.
Well, why don't we do first things first? Okay. Let's go get the grain going, and we can talk about the hops when we are in the mash.
All right.
Okay, so we're back outside, and we've decided on the grain bill. We've decided to go with.
Well, decided on the grain bill. The grain bill was decided for us because that was what was in the bag.
So. We got 10 pounds of Turo and...
Yeah, and then 10 ounces of 90 degree Levibond crystal malt. So a little darker than the original recipe, which had a pound of 60. But shouldn't really change the color too much. Maybe a little more roasty character.
Yeah, I think that would be good for this beer. Be interesting to try. So let's get it into the grain mill. Your turn, Andy.
I don't do much grain mill grind, and I have a mechanical one at the store that I use. I just turn a switch.
This is mechanical.
Yeah.
You just have to turn the crank. Watch your don't put your fingers in there.
I think I'm okay. It does a really nice job. It really does a good job on the crush.
Okay, we've got our grain ground. We've got our strike water at the temperature. And Andy's going to start pouring into the mash tun. I'm a-stirring. He's a-pouring. And I'm a-stirring.
That smells so good at this stage.
Oh. And there's we got a nice big cloud over the sun now, and it's a nice cool breeze. Looking good, smelling good. Mm-hmm. Now, Andy, there was a question emailed to me where someone was saying, is it better to add the grain to the water or the water to the grain? Now, obviously, I am adding grain to the water guy.
Right.
Because I think that you have more control over the dough balls.
Right.
The not making dough balls. But there are some people that say that, you know, those initial grains that go into that hot water are going to be, you know, the enzymes in those are going to be damaged, because it's
right.
So hot.
Because it's so hot.
But, you know, here we are, we're pouring almost 11 pounds of grain in, and we're done. And all I got to do is stir it in. So what do you say, Andy? I mean, come in close to the mic here, and what's your opinion? Grain to water or water to grain?
Well, I think some of it depends on your mash tun, your vessel. Some practices lend themselves to specific mash tuns. You have a nice mash tun with a braided fiber down the bottom, so you don't really have any problems. You can stir aggressively and that sort of thing. Whereas other situations might lend themselves to maybe a more of a gentle approach, but I'm kind of like you. I like to get it nice and thoroughly mixed together. I mean, you know, if you think about decoction mashing, where you're actually going to pull off a third of your mash and boil it, you'll denature all those enzymes, but yet you use the enzymes from the rest of the grain to do the work, and you still have plenty always. So,
right.
I don't think the very first ones that hit the water are necessarily denatured.
I mean, it's only just been a few seconds.
Right, and now we're probably getting very close to temperature.
Now the target temperature was in the mid-50s. Mm-hmm. I'm hedging my bets. And I haven't been stirring vigorously. You know, this is not working up a froth here. This is just mixing in the stuff.
Ooh, it smells so good.
Mm-hmm. And let us see where we are. We're inching up. Well, it's a little shy of what I was shooting for. We're sneaking up on 152. Yeah, we're hitting 152, which is good. Oh, wait, let me stir around a little bit more. It's still kind of equalizing the temperature. But yeah, I'd call that 152, which is a nice, respectable sacrification temperature, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Let's get the lid on here so we don't lose heat out the top.
So we're going to put the lid on. We're going to let that rest for about an hour. Probably don't need to let it rest for a whole hour, but
yeah, that's
we're going to do that. And while we're doing that, we're going to go inside and talk about hops.
And drink another beer.
Okay, Andy, we're back in the hop room, otherwise known as the guest room.
Yeah, and all these beautiful hops lay out in front of us. So let's see how many will fit in that French press.
We got a French press coffee maker that's about a quart, I think we decided. So we put it on the scale. We're going to zero the scale. And we figured, let's talk about our figuring on our hops. The last beer, the benchmark beer that we started with, was hopped with 1 ounce for 60 minutes and almost an ounce for 15. Okay. So since you got about half as much utilization on the 15-minute hops, you basically are looking at an ounce and a half.
In the boil.
In the boil.
Okay. So I'll go with you there.
And since we want it to be a little hoppier this time, So what do you think?
Oh, I'd say go for two, at least.
Okay. So we got our whole hops. We got our French press coffee maker on the scale. It's all zeroed out. So let's just start adding. Oh, you can go for more than one cone at a time, Andy.
They're so pretty.
Oh, my. Now, this is going to be a challenge.
How many do we have? We're getting pretty close to the top now.
Oh, no. Oh, is that right?
Do you need to zero it out again?
No. Okay. It's almost full. I'm going to press them down. I don't know.
I'm going to get an ounce in here.
I don't know. It's going to be a tight fit.
I'm trying to pick up only the really prettiest green ones.
They're all pretty and green. What are you talking about?
There's one with a brown spot.
Oh, my word. Okay.
So where are we at? It's good.
Let's see. Do we have an ounce thingy? Oh, no. I pressed the wrong button. Start all over again. Okay. Do not drink and weigh. Okay. There's ounces, right? It's hard to see. All right, here we go again. I'll cut this out. Oh, boy, they smell good.
They do.
I'm tamping them down as we go.
Well, we could do more than one run with the French press.
This is true.
We may have to. Looks like we can't get hardly a whole ounce in there.
Oh, my. Okay, well, that's an ounce.
And it's running over the top.
Okay, well, all right, I'm going to tamp this down. All right, we can tamp it down. And, you know, obviously the liquid can flow in between those. Man, it looks like a Randall, doesn't it?
It does, a Randall the animal. Yeah. So we'll pour beer in here and drink it out of it first.
I think that would be a better use of the
French press.
The French press.
Ooh.
Okay, well, that's an ounce. It's pretty much a full.
So I guess we have to do two runs with the French press, 1 ounce at a time?
Yeah. Okay. I think what we need to do is maybe start when the wort is like 180, and then let it steep for like 15 minutes at 180, pour that off, collect those hops, then come get another ounce of hops and whatever temperature the wort is at that point, we'll do another 15 minutes.
Well, I don't really see what choice we have. We gotta do it in steps. So, yeah, that sounds like a good plan.
Okay. Well. Now we've got, you know, almost an hour to wait for the mash, for the rest. So what can we do?
Drink some beer.
All right. Sounds like a plan. Okay, Andy, we've gone through a little bit of... It's not the perfect brew day.
No, it's not.
We had a little rain shower there. As we were pulling our mash, pulling our runnings there, and so we had to go through that. But as we were bringing the wort up to temperature, we pulled some wort off and poured it into the French press coffee maker, and we got 1 ounce of whole hops steeping in there right now for 15 minutes, and the boil's going pretty good.
Yeah, we're kind of at that magical time when you're... standing over the brew pot, it's just kind of coming to a boil. We haven't added the hops yet. It has that delicious malty aroma coming up. This is really nice. This is what it's all about.
It's it smells good. I'm going to turn down the boil just a little bit because I don't want to have too much,
right.
Lose too much wort while we're waiting on these hops to steep.
Yeah, you know, we don't have a really a whole lot of beer here or wort in here to start with. About, what do you say, 6 gallons? So we don't really want to boil real aggressively and drive down our total volume.
So what we're going to do is we're going to wait for 15 minutes while this first round of hops steeps, and then we're going to press them off and pour the liquid off into a container. And then we're going to pull some more fresh wort and do it again with more hops. And then at the end of that 15 minutes, we're going to put them in. So stay tuned. Okay, so we just pulled off the... we just pressed off this first sample of hoppy wort. And we separated the hops out into a boil. We pulled some more wort and put another ounce in the French press. And we're going to steep that for 15 minutes, but we've had a chance to taste the bit of hop, the bit of wort coming out of the French press. And what do you think, Andy?
It's interesting. It's not quite as fresh hop aroma as I was looking for. It may have something to do with the fact that we're using very fresh hops, so it still has some of the green character of fresh hops. We're getting a little vegetable smells, but nothing offensive, I don't think. It's surprising the hops, after they came out of the press that are now kind of dry, actually smell more aromatic than they did when they were in the wort. So we'll have to see.
Yeah, the hops that are in the boil actually smell better than the wort that we pulled off of the our little hoppy concentrate. And there is a bit of a almost kind of a broccoli smell. And I, as Andy said, I don't know if that's just because these were freshly picked a few days ago. I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, that's what I'm going to guess. Because they normally don't smell like that when you use fresh, you know, hops that are from the store. So, and I don't know whether you got that character last year or earlier this year when you did the beer that we used as our sample or as our test. So that's the only thing I could attribute it to. I don't think it'll be a problem.
All right. Well, we are waiting for the second batch of hops to steep. And meanwhile, the rest of the wort that's in the kettle is going through a very gentle boil so that we can get some coagulation, protein coagulation going on in there. But at the same time, we're not losing a lot of wort volume in the evaporation. So, stay tuned. Okay, we just... pulled off the second batch of hop juice from the French press, and we put all of the hops into the kettle to boil. And here in a minute, we're thinking of taking our hop juice and actually taking it inside and chilling it down a bit into a in an ice bath in the sink. We've got it in a pot now, and we think that maybe it will help preserve some of those volatile hop flavors and aromas that we took so much extra effort to pull off.
Yeah, I think it also would, it's a safer practice to get it cooled off, because as long as it's warm like this, it's susceptible to anything getting in it and making it funky. So, and it would only take a half an hour to an hour to start to change the flavor of it if something was to get in there. So let's get it cool and safe until we're ready to add it back.
And also, we're going to add it in after we shut off the boil. We're going to add this stuff in and let it sit in the hot water for about 15 minutes. So that'll help protect us a bit. But speaking of hops, Andy, as the owner of a homebrew store, thehomebrewery.com, what is the hop situation? How are we doing?
Well, hops are still short in supply. The prices are astronomical. I mean, if you've bought hops in the last few years, you know. Price of hops has doubled or tripled. We've recently been able to acquire some hops. I think what happened is at the end of this last brewing cycle, the hops will come online again this fall. So the professional breweries had locked up under contract a lot of hops. And so now they're starting to see that they're going to make it through their year, and so they're relinquishing some of these contracts. So some of the small players, some of the homebrew shops and other people have been able to acquire some. So we've actually been able to get some hops, some Cascade, some East Kent Goldings, Fuggles, stuff like that that we couldn't get all year long. So we do have some, not a lot. They cost us a lot to get, but we're glad to have them.
And what is your strategy? I mean, you have a local store. But you also have an online store. What is your strategy as far as rationing those hops out to your customers?
Well, you know, since I'm a small player, my local customers come first. So, you know, they show up on Saturday and they're planning to brew Sunday, and they need to be able to have stuff. They can't mail order, you know, and get it by, you know, at that late date. So I try to, you know, take care of my local people, and then, you know, sell what's left online. So we're still restricting our hop sales online. We probably could open that up on a couple different varieties and might some of the things we have more of. But so that's kind of our strategy right now is obviously we're in the business of to sell these products. So when we get them, we want to put them up for sale. But on the other hand, we want to have plenty to go in our kits through Christmas and stuff like that. Have plenty for customers to make beer with. So yeah, it's a balance. You try to, you know, keep enough for the people that are important.
So it's good to know that I have a local hop store or local homebrew store with hops safely put away in a nice cool place, and I hope that most of the listeners out there have a similar resource as well. Well, let's the boil has we put the hops in the boil, so we're going to come back in about an hour and go to the next step. Okay, we've taken we've turned the fire off, and we've taken the hop juice, and we've put it in the kettle, and we're going to steep that for 15 minutes. And it's interesting. The hop juice smelled kind of vegetal still. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, how much of that is left after it's steeped in this hot wort and after it's fermented.
Right. You know, I think, you know, both of us were under the impression that this technique was, you know, going to give us a very aromatic first run off this French press. And we were kind of excited to smell that. And when we did, it wasn't as fresh and hoppy as maybe it is normally when we put it in at the very end of a batch. So it will be interesting. It'd be interesting to try it also with some hops of a known quantity, something that we've brewed with before, and see if maybe hops that have gone through the full process, completely dried out, maybe even frozen for a while, would lose that little vegetal smell a little bit.
Or maybe hop pellets as well.
Oh, that's an interesting choice too. And the thing about hop pellets, they're ground up, so you're going to get a nice distribution, and all the wort can work right down into each little bit of the hop. And one of the things that we noticed is when we pulled the wet whole hops out of the French press, you could break them open. You could still see that lots of the lupulin glands were tucked deep down into those hops, so it didn't pull much of that out. So,
and actually, the hops that were pulled out of the French press smelled better than the liquid that was pulled out of the French press.
That was kind of surprising, yeah.
But it'll be interesting to see what the bitterness aspect is, and the aroma and the flavor aspect as well. You know what? If in a week I can taste this in the fermenter, and if it still needs some help, I can do what Chris suggested in his Tokyo's Brutal Pale Ale recipe and brew your own, and do another little wort and hop that in a similar way with the French press, and, you know, add that to the beer at that time. I think we've got the volume that will allow that to happen, and maybe if we need to doctor the hop flavor and aroma at that point, we can do that as well.
Right. You know, that's the thing, you know, and I think that's a lesson that a lot of home brewers can take, is that it's coming out of the secondary, you're about to put it in the bottles, give it a taste, and if there's some adjustment that needs to be made, maybe this kind of technique where we use a French press like this is a way to dose up the aroma character of your beer at the last minute, right before it goes into the keg.
We usually don't talk about commercial beers, but Brian from Indiana sent me a bunch of beers, and this is we're sipping on a Bluegrass Brewing Company's Home Wrecker Double India Pale Ale, and it's a tasty beer. I don't know that I would call it a double IPA, would you?
I don't know. I mean, that's a style that's kind of out there, and we've definitely tried a few of these. This one tends to lean a lot more towards the malt side of the scale. I would be looking for some more hops, but that maybe that's just because the double IPAs that I tend to lean to tend to be super hoppy beers. This one has some subtle kind of like I want to say like sherry notes, which is typical in like an old stock ale. Very nice. Usually from beers that you can save for a long time. So this one looks like it would be a nice one to put back.
Well, we're not going to have the opportunity to do that.
I mean, it does remind me of a barley wine. Yeah. In some ways.
Well, it's a tasty beer. So we will we're going to let this steep a little while, and then we're going to go on to chill. Okay, this is the final segment. Here we are in the kitchen, and the wort is in the fermenter, and the yeast has been pitched, and the wort has been aerated. And we found a final use for the French press coffee maker. We cleaned it, we sanitized it, and?
Well, then we pressed all the whole hops that were left at the bottom of the kettle through the French press. And it looks like this is a pretty nice method for pulling out that last quart or two of wort that's always stuck in those little wort sponges. We always kind of fret about throwing away those heavy whole hops at the end of a batch, and this looks like a pretty nice way. Hopefully it doesn't pull anything out of the hops that we won't like. We'll see.
But the hops themselves smell really nice still, even after being in a 1 hour boil.
Yeah, it is kind of surprising. You know, you kind of wish you could pull the rest of the good smells that you can smell in that pot over there. You could get them into your beer. I hate to throw those away because they still smell a lot like kind of fresh hops, or at least have the nice aroma characters of Cascade hops.
Well, I'm going to make a sachet out of them, put them in my sock drawer.
There you go. I'm afraid the sticky wort that's in amongst them might sour the next few days.
Well, it's worth a shot. That's all I got to say. Well, this has been a really fun experience, and it will be interesting to see how the beer turns out, and I will certainly update everybody on the status of this beer in upcoming shows. But Andy, I appreciate your coming over today and helping with the brew session and bringing a couple of Dale's Pale Ales as you came over.
No problem. I know you like those, so, and I had a few of those left around. No, I had a good time as well. Beautiful day, except for the little storm in the middle. A little hot, but it is August, so nice. We got a nice brew down.
Excellent. Thanks, Andy.
Thank you, James.
Well, the verdict is still out on the French press pale ale, but the smells coming from the airlock smell pretty good, so I'm very hopeful, very optimistic. I'll keep you posted on the progress. Appreciate Andy's help again. It was a lot of fun to brew with Andy out on the patio and sip some good beers in the process. And you can check out Andy's shop, as usual, at thehomebrewery.com. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com, or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and don't forget to tell us where you're from. Of course, you can check out our low-tech lagering and decoction mashing DVD on basicbrewingshop.com, where you can see my buddy Steve Wilkes do a single-step decoction mash and follow me through a lager fermentation in the middle of summer, where I don't use a dedicated chest freezer. There are also our original DVDs and Basic Brewing Introduction to Extract Home Brewing. We walk you through the extract brewing process step-by-step from boiling to bottling. And in Basic Brewing Stepping into All Grain, we take you through the all grain process from milling your grain to collecting your wort. We got the combo deals on our site if you want to save a couple bucks. And you can also see a listing of the fine folks across the country and around the world who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order it online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. We got the shirts. We got different colored shirts. We got the flocculate shirts. Go forth and flocculate shirts. So check those out too. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are The Illustrated Guide to Wood Strip Canoe Building. Now, that sounds like fun. And Crazy Machines, the Wacky Contraptions Game for Mac and Windows. we've got that. My 8-year-old just loves that game. It is a cool game. Thanks again, everybody. Remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We appreciate your support. As usual, we also have an associate link to the Apple Store on the site. That's all until next week. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by our buddy Kelly Dodson down in Austin. I was in Texas yesterday. It was hot. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We will talk to you next time, everybody. So long.